baby buck knows your son-in-law.
Shameless plug for the mugs. I know Jimmy got one this morning, so that's their $50. One full year in the rainings. Got yeah. One full year, unlimited hot drinks. So. All right, so I had a lot of good feedback from last week, and I appreciate that, and people came back, which is good, so didn't offend anyone, I don't think. So what we are going to do today, thanks for letting me run through fast last week. I want to try to slow it down a little bit today and certainly encourage people to chime in, ask questions, disagree, whatever it may be, on the topic, because it's a very, I think, a big topic for us as a Church of Christ, this church, and in our future. I really do believe that. I know others do as well. What I want to do, just to recap what we did last week for those that weren't here, or again, I went fast. Again, I apologize for that. We really went through a very fast history of music in the church. We talked about a cappella, what that means. Just a reminder, it just means in the church, which is just a term that came out of the 1400s, not the New Testament, in reference to actually a type of non-instrumental style that was in the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican is where the term a cappella came from. Actually did not make it into the Webster Dictionary until 1860s, which I think, if you think about that, the timing of the Church of Christ in the movements to move away from instruments, that's when Webster needed something to define worship that's done vocally. So I didn't mention that last week. I also talked about worship, and we'll hit on this a little bit again, because I want to touch on some points I think I missed last week, and what the term worship means in reference really to the assembly. And then we talked about hermeneutics, which I'll talk about again in a minute, and the importance of that on this topic and others. This week, what we want to do really is just side by side lay out the defenses of, I guess, both sides. And we're going to talk about the top seven or eight defenses of instrumental music. And then obviously we're going to hit on and follow that up with the some counters to those defenses, as well as the stances that the Church of Christ has taken over the years and to this day has, quote, stood the test of time, maybe. And next week, if we don't get enough time, Lynn's been gracious enough to let us, if we need to go another week on this, we can. And so hopefully we'll get through that today. And then if we do, next week, really want to move into what do we do with this? What do we talk about as a church and how we're going to grow, how we're going to address, I think, the pressure, if you will, of you can call it a younger crowd, but I don't think that's even fair. I think there's a movement, if you will, for people of all ages to gravitate to something that they're used to doing in the car, at home, or whatever it is. So I don't think this is necessarily an age issue. This is a church issue. So next week, I really want to spend time and follow up with that and really talk and get your thoughts on what do we do and what's really important to carry out the mission of God here and around the world. All right, so just again, a recap from last week. A cappella just means in the chapel is the Italian phrase. It's not Latin. Thank you, Sean, for bringing that up last week. Worship. The importance here is, as I said last week, is that a lot of the arguments against instruments in worship is because we don't find it in the New Testament in what we would call the corporate worship. And I think that's a term we hear often, corporate worship, but that term doesn't exist in the New Testament. And really, I think we often read a lot about where the where you allow it or where you prohibit it is in worship. And again, not wanting to pick a side here. That's not what I want to do. I think it is important for us, because that is such is so tied to this, to talk about what that means. And there's six phrases, or six words in the Greek that we use for the word worship. I went through them fast last week, but the most common, 54 times, is proskuneo, which implies falling down, being prostrate. That's what that phrase means. And that's only a verb. Latreia, there's actually a noun and a verb for this one. That's basically what you call every waking minute. That's kind of the living sacrifice term for worship. And then there's a few other words that are defined for worship. But again, nothing that ties that word worship specifically to corporate worship that we find in an assembly. And we also, I mentioned the passage, and it's important to talk about what did Jesus say about worship. And really, we can point to, I think the primary is when he's speaking to the Samaritan woman at the well, and she asks, well, where do we worship? Where do we need to worship? There's this conflict of, you know, where the Samaritans think that you can worship and where the Jews, and Jesus said, it's not about where. He says, you worship what's acceptable to God is you worship in spirit and truth. And I think that's for hopefully next week. But let me stop before I move forward and just point out a couple things that I maybe didn't hit on hard enough last week. Number one, I'm doing this, and this was, you know, selfishly because of things that I've struggled with about how, what role I can play, what we can play in reaching the lost, and what can we do as a church to bring people here to make disciples who make disciples. And this seems to have been a stumbling block to some people. And I want to understand, is it really a stumbling block? Is it something that's just, you know, for me, or what is it? Because, I mean, if you think about all the conflicts we've had, this is the big one. So first of all, I just want to ask, I mean, in those who were here last week or today, I mean, what other major conflicts does the Church of Christ have that has been as divisive as this? Baptism, in terms of just requirements, the obedience to be baptized?
Women
teaching. Women's role in the church. Yeah, we talked about in the 50s last week that women wearing pants was a big no-no, and we got over that, didn't we? So, looking around, the women wearing pants today. So, what else?
Premillennialism.
A gymnasium. Larry. And what do you mean by that? Besides, outside of like instrumental music. Yeah, clapping. Yep.
I had an old lady in my Nazarene church. She got up and danced the aisles. She got
dancing, yeah. I don't think we've experienced that one yet. Here. Yeah, and on that, I think one of the things we don't have a lot of time to talk about, but it's important if you think about some of the arguments. I would say more the if you think about those who favor instruments in worship, some of the things that they point back at or really poke at with the Church of Christ is the idea of having one person leading, because if you look at the early church, it was, in this terms of congregational, there wasn't a single person. You find a lot in the history, everyone's participating. And so again, we don't have much time to talk about that, but there's been a lot of challenges to those who only have one person up on stage or one, it has become a big deal.
Right.
Yep.
That's
right.
Church. It was a charismatic church.
Yeah, solos are a problem for some as you read. And if you're, and this isn't, again, if you're a literalist, it's not hard to argue against it if you have that that hermeneutic. Well, and again, those are I think, first of all, I didn't want to make this case that this is the big one, but there are others. But I think for now, and as we talk about this, even for our church, with what's happening in our community, community of Madison as well as the community of Nashville, and what we've seen happen in other churches who have moved toward the use of instruments, it's I think this is one of the biggest. I think I mentioned it last week. I mean, homosexuality, abortion, there's some things I think we, I don't think we have a lot of disagreement about, which is good. But I know I said last week, and I think earlier you had said this, a heaven or hell issue. And I don't want to just run through that too fast, because I think I made a comment last week. I do want to pull back. I said I didn't think that many people believe that anymore. But if that is the case, if that is something where you believe it is a heaven or hell issue, I mean, first, open it up. I mean, this is we love each other. We want to talk about it, and I think it's important. What I will say about that is, when you read the literature and you read the scholars, I never found a single reference to anyone saying those who use instruments are going to hell. I didn't find any reference to anyone who said that it is a sin. What you find, and we'll talk about this morning, is the silence. And what does that mean? And that's the thing that we struggle with. Well, if it's not spoken or if it's not written, what does God interpret that as? And I think that people will move to this safety level. We want to be safe, and we don't want to imply anything if it's not written. And so with that, we jump to, then if it's not commanded by God or prohibited by God, we need to not touch it, and then therefore it could be sinful, right? So does anybody have any thoughts on that, or want to mention anything more about sort of the sinfulness or heaven or hell issue around this topic? And we can talk next week or as much as you want about that. But
yeah, I kind of grew up with a mentality in churches of, if it isn't proven, if you can't prove it in the Bible, if it's not right being defined as not in the Bible, mm-hmm. If you're not right, you're sinning.
Right.
It's a sin if you're not right. And so that's there's your hard line.
So when somebody says to you, so does that mean that my friends down the street are going to hell, what do you say? But you're not answering the question. Are they going to hell? And that's the thing. And that'd be not to joke about it, but
no,
put somebody on the spot to say, are they going to hell? They can't really. They tend to not. They just say, well, it is a sin. Well, are they going to hell? It's a sin. I mean, so I think that's.
Oh, no, I've heard them say they're going to hell.
Yeah,
I've heard them say that.
And I don't. And again, this isn't to make fun of that or diminish that, because I think it is a serious piece of this. So, last thing I wanted to say, and let's see, I ran Larry off. The elders didn't ask me to do this. There's no takeaway from this class about this, so please know that. This is just exploration and discussion. So there's not
an official position.
No. And I think ultimately, like I said, I mean, next week we want to spend time on or in this with, what do we do with this, and how do we grow closer to God? How do we grow closer to each other? And that's all this is. So so let's start one more thing just from last week. We talked about, and again, this last topic we just said, hermeneutics is just the theory and methodology of interpretation. It's a lot of literature on this. A lot of scholarly work has gone into what it means to interpret scripture, how you do it, what lexicons you use, what, harmony you go about, with Old Testament, New Testament. But that's a big piece of this, and we'll hit on that this week.
Exegesis come into that?
What'd you say?
Exegesis.
Yeah. Yeah, because you'll break apart, what one passage is, word for word, and then try to apply it. Yes. And there's a lot of cultural aspects to this. We ran through the history last week, but and the authority of Scripture, which is what we just talked about. It's no one can debate. I don't think we'll debate. We do what God says, and we don't do what He forbids. It's the other area. It's what about the stuff He's silent on? And that gets into, is it prohibitive or is it permissive? And so, I don't know. It's, again, chime in or feel free to talk about that. But that's we'll get into more of that in a little bit. The way I want to approach this is really kind of the, I would call it the prosecution, which is really going to be the pro-instrumental music. And I know Julia and I talked about this. It's, you don't want to get into this anti-instrumental music or pro this. It's not really, don't lean into the pro versus anti. But as you get into a lot of the literature on it, that's kind of what, you know, that's what it says. And so don't take anything into that. But there is sort of the anti-instrumental music, which would be the Church of Christ, what we believe. That's, we're going to follow up with that, let that be the defense of, and less about attacking, but just what are our stances? Why do we believe it? And it's less about, you know, we think this other crowd doesn't, you know. I will say this. I wish I had brought the Shelley book. Ribble makes a great comment in his book from the 80s around, it is, if you find someone who says that they believe that instrumental music is okay because they haven't studied the scripture enough, that's just wrong. I think that those who love the Lord, those who believe in his word, are on both sides of this. And that's just, I think, and I want to make that definitive statement from my opinion that I think that's the case. So, but that being said, let's kind of go into the case for instrumental music in worship. As I said last week, the abundance of literature out there there's a lot more literature in favor of a cappella music than there is in favor of instrumental music. It's just there's not as much literature out there. There's abundance of it as why we don't do it. Less so on in favor of it. I mean, there's, I mentioned.
Did you limit your authors to Church of Christ minded people, or was it across all denominations?
Well, yeah, I mean, so on that point, I mentioned two books last week, or really one. Everett Ferguson is really the Church of Christ scholar on a cappella music. He's written a lot of books. He's referenced in virtually everything that you find online or in by all authors. He spent a lot of time on the history of the Church of Christ, the early church, and he's written tons on a cappella music. And so I do use a lot of his works, but obviously, I didn't get into it last week, there's a lot of commentary from all denominations around. And again, historically, over the last almost 1,500, well, really 2,000 years against it. You just don't find as much throughout history in support of it. What I landed on the other side, and not necessarily the full piece here on the case four, I mentioned last week that Rick Atchley at the Richland Hills Church of Christ in Texas at the time in 2006, they introduced a third worship. They actually introduced it on a Saturday, which also brought about some other attacks, if you will. They were the largest Church of Christ at the time, and they introduced an instrumental worship. And so you'll see a lot of references to that. If you haven't listened to it, I would encourage it. There's a lot of people. Steve Flatt used a lot of Rick Atchley. He's well respected, and so I used some of those notes for this, as well as some other authors, not all Church of Christ. The one that I landed on that I really like and I'd encourage is this book by Danny Corbett called Missing More Than Music. And Church of Christ was a Church of Christ. He still worships and goes in and out of Church of Christ because he loves a cappella music. But he spent a lot of time in respect of, but challenging Ferguson's comments and points, which I think you could summarize almost all of Ferguson as what we believe anyway. I don't think there's really anything that's surprising of what Ferguson says. So I'm rambling a little bit, but I just wanted to talk about those two books. And again, I'm happy to share these or others that I've got on the topic. All right, so the question here, and as I stood up here, is, you know, how is this not pleasing to God? So the general conversation, when you start talking about instrumental music, is this idea of, okay, how can I be, number one, the idea of the car, you know, listening to the K-Love, you know, or something on the radio, is that worship? And if it is, am I doing something sinful? Or is that acceptable to God? And how could it not be, is sort of the conversation. And as we talked about last week, and we'll talk about here, we know it's in the Old Testament. And so, and there's strong argument that God commanded it in the Old Testament. So if God, if that's the case, and we believe in the New Testament, there is no references to instrumental music, why does God no longer approve of it? And if so, when did he change his mind? In references to what? I mean, in terms of commanding it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll need to, I'll print them off.
Okay.
There's
two or three references to music, instrumental music ordained by David, not by God. It was after the temple had been built.
Mm-hmm.
David added music, instrumental music.
But that's a good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. But there are. 2 Chronicles, and I'll get to it, is the one that most people reference as, if you'll remind me at the end of the class, I've got it in here. And that's a great point, and please throw that up, because I think that's, as we'll talk about here, that command, you know, and again, somewhat, you couldn't even lean to that to some extent. If it's there, it's there, and there's obviously no condemnation of it, and we'll talk about that. So, but again, that's sort of, if it was something that was used and God allowed it, when and why did he change is sort of the general conversation. Going into that, one of the top arguments that's made is that Jesus never addressed it. And so, and again, Jesus didn't address everything. He didn't address polygamy. He didn't address, obviously you can joke, I mean, but serious, he didn't address much around even don't drink. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that Jesus did not address. And so this gets into a little bit of the silence argument. But again, if you look at that, at the John 4 passage again, and he said true worship was in the spirit of truth. He didn't mention anything around singing. And we'll show some examples here in a minute where there are some potential references to Christ in prophecy that are tied to possibly instruments. But Jesus, you know, he spent his entire life in the temple up until the very end. And we know from history that in the temple, instruments were being used, even at this time. Not to say that's in the New Testament. And it was, you know, again, there's other sides that will argue that it was only for temple worship. And we'll talk about sort of the argument back on this. But again, Jesus never addressed it. And some would say, hey, he drove out the money changers, so why didn't he drive out the musicians? The second thing is it was a non-issue in Acts, which really gets into this idea of it wasn't prohibited. And if Acts is one of our models from the early church on how we should church today, then shouldn't we expect some sort of condemnation as the Church of Christ has cast it in some form or fashion? I mean, the early church had a model of worship. We believe that in historical, that they used a lot of the, from the synagogue practices. The synagogue, we have no reference historically of the synagogue using instruments. Matter of fact, it was literature and early historians find that they were in condemnation of instruments as well in the synagogues. And so we believe that's the style that the early church adopted. We also know, though, that early Christians met in around the temple as well. But again, Jesus never addressed it, and it was not specifically prohibited in Acts. And again, these are the big you know, arguments for using it. Go back to this one, commanded in the Old Testament. Second Chronicles 7:6. Let's look at that one. I knew I'd find it. I want to see, and there are a lot of Psalms, Sean, yes, but let me, so, and I'll have to dig into the, you know, hundreds of pages on this topic to come back to it. Somebody can get there faster than me. Second Chronicles 7:6. So, yeah, thank you, Teddy. That's a point. There's another one, and let's see. I just wrote down two on this one. Second Chronicles 30, 21. No. Second, what'd you say, Shannon? 30. Yeah, that's okay. Yes, and the Lord, yeah, Second Chronicles 30:20, and the Lord heard Hezekiah and healed the people. The Israelites who were present in Jerusalem celebrated the feast of unleavened bread for 7 days with great rejoicing, while the Levites and priests sang to the Lord every day, accompanied by the Lord's instruments of praise. Anybody got any other ones? I've got Psalm 81 is, and again, this isn't me. I'm telling you what some of the use of some of the arguments. Let's see. Oh, goodness. I didn't put a verse on this one. I'm sorry.
Sing for joy to God our strength. Shout in triumph to the God of Jacob. Lift up a song. Play the tambourine, the melodious lyre, and the harp. Blow the horn on the day of our feast. So typically a shofar, which is a joke.
This is a decree for Israel, an ordinance of the God of Jacob. So again, be careful with the translations that you're using. Again, I'm just saying, we'll talk about this in a minute, but use of translations is really important here. So always when these, don't just lean into one. I'll go into that when it talks about singing, what that means. Anybody else got any thoughts on this one? Again, just other than just the argument is that, you know, the entire book of Psalms, and the word psalm is in the lexicon almost entirely associated with playing some sort of instrument or plucking. And so you have the entire book. And there's a lot of references to, you know, the importance of psalm. Yeah, yes, Sean. No, and so that's just, again, there's a baseline here. And obviously, one of the quickest—I'll go ahead and say it—the quickest counters to this is you know, Jesus came. Well, they say, well, there's a lot of things that we don't do in the Old Testament anymore. We don't make animal sacrifices. We don't burn incense. The next argument there is, well, some of the for animal sacrifices, that's a shadow of Christ. Therefore, animal sacrifices are no longer needed because you have Christ. So, trying to link singing and instruments to animal sacrifices is a weak argument. So, and then you go back and forth on this stuff. It's funny. It never ends on the back and forth. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where this is going to follow in here, but some people just can't carry attention. I've been in church a lot of times, and guys typically, I don't know if it's a shyness thing or whatever, but they can't carry attention. And I'd rather than not. You know what I'm saying?
I sit on his pew, and I can say we need him.
But I can play an instrument, you know. I've been in churches where I was involved in the balcony brass or whatever you want to call it, and the enhancement to the worship is amazing, you know. But it is kind of like our worship group up front. It wasn't for entertainment. Does that make a difference?
It does. So hang on to that thought, because
yeah.
I think that's going to be a theme that we're going to continue to think about and talk about.
And let me play the devil's advocate.
Please do, Teddy.
Yeah. Amos 5, verse 3.
Yep, that's one used often.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, it's a woe to,
yep,
you know, people. And it says, the city that goes out by the, I don't know, let me see,
I've got,
Oh, was it Amos 3?
It's Amos, and it's Amos.
It's Amos 6, I'm sorry, 5. Who sing idly to the sound of stringed instruments and invent for themselves musical instruments like David. And I play the devil's advocate.
No, and that's a good point. Most, almost entirely, even on both sides, will say that was really more about the heart and that the people of the time didn't honor God. He didn't want anything. It's the same thing as, I don't even want your sacrifice if it's not going to be of your heart. So, but people do reference Amos in that specific passage. All right, so again, we'll talk, spend more time on the Old Testament piece in a second. All right. And I'll go ahead and say this, and this is a comment that is not meant, I'm not in favor of it, but I will say something that has sparked a lot of debate. And Ashley said this in his, I think the second, he did three Sundays in a row. And the second one, he makes a bold statement that basically says, no one without the Church of Christ, this is my phrase, indoctrination, but without the Church of Christ heritage history, could possibly conclude that instrumental music is forbidden if they sincerely studied the Bible cover to cover. And I've seen a lot of that comment, which is if you don't have that a cappella lens and you read it from start to finish, a lot of people kind of hit home with that. I don't know if anybody's got any thought on that, but basically if you have no heritage of the Church of Christ, and you read the Bible cover to cover, sincerely, what they say is there's no way you could possibly determine or believe that God couldn't and wouldn't honor someone who wants to worship him using instruments. I mean, you know, again, I'm not in favor of just, that's something that Ashley said and quite a few others do as well. And again, that gets into sort of this, you know, this history, all of a sudden, the darkness between the Old and the New Testament, and then we wake up and, oh, nope, don't want it anymore. It's kind of, again.
Yeah, that phrase, though, sounds just like, if you don't interpret the Bible like I do.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next one is instrumental music in heaven. Tell me again, how much time do I have?
2 minutes.
Nope. Are you serious?
I gave you two.
Okay.
For the record.
All right, well, guess what, Lynn? I guess I'm going to use next week, so. Oh, that's good. So don't rush through this. So instrumental music in heaven is the other big argument. Let's go to, I'm going to go to Revelation. I'm going to hit on a couple of these. So let's look at Revelation 5:9, and I'm going to hit three fast ones. Grab 14:3 and 15. Well, 14:2 and 3 and 15:2 and 3. Those are right next to each other. So Revelations, and I think, who's got Revelation 5? And read maybe 8, 9, and 10. They got that.
5, 8, 9, 10?
Yeah.
When he took the scroll of the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each one had a harp and gold bowls filled with incense for the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song. You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals because you were slaughtered. From every tribe and language and people and nation, you made them a kingdom and priests to our God and overwhelmed them.
So there's one that includes instruments. Let's see. Who wants to read 14:2 and 3? Anybody want that?
I heard a sound from heaven like the sound of cascading waters, and like the rumbling of loud thunder. The sound I have heard was also like harpers playing on their harps. Sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one could learn the song except for the 144,000 who we know is saints of life.
So, okay, so but in your verse, you're using the NIV, correct? Okay, well, the NIV also says like that of a harpist, so just, we'll talk about that in a second. 15:2 and 3. Anybody else want to grab that?
I saw what appeared to be a sea of glass mingled with fire, and also those who had conquered the beast and its image, and the number of its name standing beside the sea of glass, with harps of God in their hands, and they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying.
So, and again, back to the need for using different translations. NIV in 14 says, like, the sound I heard was like that of a harpist. The King James Version says, and I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps. So again, you have a lot of people that will say, well, it's just like, and you'll have some people that say, you got to make sure you read the versions. So those are three, and again, just... It is. I think the final, and that's important, context. I mean, next week we're going to talk about the defense of this, and it is symbolic, and it's not literal. One counter back to that is that John used the Greek terms ido and ode, which in all of these references, those are the words that he used. And if you look at the historical reference of those, the lexicon throughout, those two words always include the reference to instruments. And we know John knew the Greek. He also was writing to that audience. So the question is, why would he use two words that always, in these passages, include instruments if he didn't mean to use it? And then, a counter-argument to this, someone saying it was symbolic, was why on earth would God even mention it? I mean, because you'll have people that will say, well, it was, you know, are people really going to be literally playing harps in heaven? I don't know, why not? So, then I may need two more weeks on this. But so last point is, and again, this is more of a longer one, but Silo is, I think, is probably the biggest crux for both sides. There is thousands and thousands of pages in research on the term silo. Silo is the key word that's in both. Actually, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to jump real fast, and we'll come back to all these next week. Hang on, just give me a second. Because I want to end on this. Let me go back up here. All right. So, in both our key, as I said last week, there's two key passages that the Church of Christ, just to say that, or the pro a cappella, not anti-instrumental music, land on, and these are the two. This is not it, but these are the two primary ones. And what you find is that, lexicon is just for that term is just it's a kind of dictionary that looks at how words were derived and how they're used in their day in order to show meaning. So you'll find that. But these two passages, you get into speaking to one another, which is a key word we'll talk about. Next time, songs, hymn songs, and singing, these are the key words. Making melody is the Greek for that is solo in your heart to the Lord. The translation for Colossians, you'll find in some, will say, it's the same word. Solo is in both, but here it's making melody, and in other words, you'll find with grace. And so there's people on the pro a cappella side that try to talk about what the author's intent was there. But on this point, in a case for instruments, let me just say this, and we'll spend more time next week. The word solo, those three, psalmos, hymnos, ode, the majority of the lexicon always talk about those words meaning to play or to pluck, and the intention is with instruments. And we'll hear the argument from the pro a cappella side on that. But just know that solo is one of the is both sides will say what it means, and they both disagree. I will. Matter of fact, just so you don't you think I'm not just making stuff up, I'm going to end with this, and we'll move on. So these are the some of the major lexicons that are used for the Greek, and I'm going to hit on some of those. But the word solo. The Greek word there. One is in accordance with Old Testament usage, sing to the accompaniment of a harp, also meaning sing praise. One is later, sing to a harp. Another, there's three, it says, of the Septuagint translation, The obvious sense is to play, especially when an instrument is mentioned. Elsewhere, the idea of praise by song as well as stringed instrument is suggested. And I'm happy to share these. Guy named Gingrich and Danker is a popular lexicon who wrote one. In accordance with Old Testament usage, which, again, argue both sides, sing praise for one whom the praise is intended. So that one doesn't necessarily hit on instruments. But he does say in a second definition, sort of meaning of the original was to pluck and to play. And solo frequently means sing, whether to the accompaniment of a harp or not. So you'll find a lot that say with or without. And I can keep going, and I may just print some of these off next week if y'all would like to have them, just in case. But so I'm going to end on that with the word solo. We'll go through a few more next week. Any final thoughts or questions? Anything that you'd like me to talk more about? I'll bring some examples. I will spend some time, because it's a good point, on Old Testament commands. No, because it's an argument. I think it's a good one. And I'm not saying you're making that point. But
thank you.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like if you stay with just that train of thought, then the only instrument that would be acceptable would be the harp, not others.
And that's a good point. And a lot of people will say there's only certain instruments that were allowed, but then where I don't kind of where you can go with that, yeah.
Saxophone.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll tease for next week. We'll talk about what the major defense of that word solo is on the pro a cappella side. So, all right.
Done your homework.
This is going.
Cool,
this is going really slow.
Like a college class.
I'm going pretty slow, Lynn. I'm sorry.
It's good. I'm glad you.
I didn't even think.